Ruska Street in Lublin.
Uzdę zbordował przez Niemcy, stanowisko 23, wóz do Świdnika, stanowisko 19, odjazd 15:35.
A bus station, a bazaar, a row of bus stops, service points, constant traffic. The past connotations of this place are concealed, yet they comprise a border of worlds. Behind me rises Twardek Hill, the oldest part of the city. It is believed that this is where the first people settled around the 6th century. This is where the Thursday markets were held and where the Renaissance Church of St. Nicholas is located. Right next door, at the foot of the hill, a well, saved from extermination, one of the few material traces of the Jewish quarter in Lublin. It used to be located on Szeroka Street, the backbone of the Jewish city. There used to be queues for water, as you can see from archival photographs. It was surrounded by dense, fairly tall buildings, of which no traces remain today. A few dozen steps from the well, there is an Orthodox church, the late Renaissance Cathedral of the Transfiguration. It is an Orthodox cathedral, the most important temple of the Eastern Rite in the region and in the city. And here, as if from a completely different order, the bus station appeared at some point. This station will soon be moved to another part of the city, but it is still a sign of the way history has been dealt with in Lublin. What the city was like 80 years ago, what it is like today, and what the space says about its multiculturalism. This is a neglected place, its former significance consigned to an abyss. Ruska Street has been for the last few years a thoroughfare for arrivals and departures from the city, a harbour or place of transfer. Yet for a long period in its history it had another function, that of a portal between worlds. It was such a bridge even in the interwar period, the last time when Lublin was inhabited by people of at least three religions and more than one culture. Dialogues on 20th Century History. Podcast by the European Network Remembrance and Solidarity. After the Great War, Lublin, Multiculturalism and New Countries in 1918. My name is John Beecham. I'm a Polish-British radio journalist. Today I am going to tell you about the multiculturalism of Lublin just after the Great War. Although parts of the city from 1918 no longer exist, they can be seen in old photographs and postcards. The mind's eye can see the non-existent streets from the castle tower. I climb up to the top with Professor Natalia Przesmycka, a lecturer at Lublin University of Technology. It's windy, but clear. 100 years ago, we would have seen two towns, one Christian and one Jewish. Would we also have noticed the now invisible borders?
In 1918, in this place, we are standing now on the castle hill, we would see the Jewish town or Jewish district, because sometimes we use both names for this part of the city, which was incredibly dense, built with different kind of houses, with lots of small streets, with only a few wider streets, a very famous one, for example, Szeroka Street, which was the center of the Jewish town, which was the busiest street in the Jewish town. The real border, administrative border from former times of Russian period in our history, was Lubartowska Street and the borders of the old town, and then the line of Czachówka River. But in 1918, Lubartowska was filled with houses, with tenement buildings and other buildings, which architectural style was very similar or even the same as in the other parts of Lublin. So if we would walk deeper into the Jewish district, we could find more elements of architecture that could be seen as totally different. For example, buildings like the Great Synagogue, the only one example of such architecture in Lublin, or we could see very small wooden houses situated close to the river which were so poor that living there was problematic, but they were still in use for a long, long time.
The bugle call has been part of the city's soundscape since the mid-15th century. Today it resounds from the balcony of Lublin's town hall. In the interwar period, it was played three times from the nearby Krakowska Gate, at 8, 12 and 6 p.m. Today, the gate houses the Museum of History of the City of Lublin, and its tower offers a view of the city centre of Lublin. What could be seen from this place just after the Great War?
After the 60s of 19th century, Jewish people could buy properties and settle in Christian districts. So the old town, which was the closest part to the Jewish district, was the most interesting for them to live. So they started to buy houses, flats, and change them a little bit. We must remember that there was a shortage of houses, so they tried to build higher. And in that time, Jewish inhabitants had to add some elements of architecture for a religious purpose, like balconies, and special balconies called in Polish kuczka, szuka. It was a balcony usually situated in the background or in the backside of the building. And these balconies, which I mentioned at the beginning, balconies were added usually on the first floor along the main street. So in Grodzka Street we could find some balconies facing Grodzka Street. And in the corners of these balconies there were some special candelabras for Hanukkah candles. So it was possible to celebrate Jewish festivals in the conditions that were especially designed for that purpose.
Let's take a look westwards. In 1918, we would have noticed the bulbous domes of the Orthodox Cathedral.
Built in 1876 as a symbol of Russian domination. And of course it served the Russians who came to Lublin, who lived here. We must remember that in this time there was a lot of Russian soldiers and Russian staff for administration, so it was also important for them to have such a symbolic church. After 1918, there was a decision to demolish the great Orthodox church and to use the material, mostly bricks, to build another important building. This building was the house of a soldier. It was a very elegant and prominent building situated in new part of Lublin, the part of Lublin on the western side, which was created as a new center for developing Lublin in interwar period.
Lublin is today considered a city in eastern Poland, but for several centuries it was right in the middle of the country. This was also the case after 1918. What was the place like then?
I would say typical. Typical as we try to define the city according to the rules from 1990.
As Dr. Łukasz Jasina points out.
Lublin wasn't big enough to be a metropolis, because it was rather a small city, no more than 100,000 of people. But it was not very small at the same time. It was the seat of the Tsarist governor before the First World War. It was the city of multicultures, but different way than those cities from Polish borderlands.
Lublin society was multicultural, and the newly formed state was a nation-state. Professor Sławomir Jacek Żurek, an expert in literature at the Catholic University of Lublin, paints a picture of Lublin's multiculturalism.
Lublin was called the Jerusalem of the Kingdom of Poland. There were more than 100 synagogues and houses of prayer in Lublin. There were many Jewish schools, Jewish congregations, communities and institutions in our city. About half of its citizens were represented by Jews, but the other part was not only Roman Catholics, but It was very diversified.
Lublin multicultural was Polish-Jewish. It was, let's say, a very typical city of Polish-Jewish positive and negative problems and all the issues we have between those two nations. And Lublin was a typical city with those problems where Poles and Jews try to live together, and usually they did, but at the same time, they live separately. There was no work for the people, a lot of lack of any positive impacts. And center was surrounded by the neighborhoods with poor Jews and Poles who need some resolution.
The Jews of Lublin lived mainly in the castle borough, in the quarter below the old town. The border between these two quarters was the Grodzka Gate, known as the Jewish Gate. Today it houses a center for documenting the memory of the non-existent city. Near the gate, I meet Dr. Teresa Klimowicz, who teaches the history of Lublin Jews at the local Maria Curie Skłodowska University. We look at the bailey, dominated by a huge car park. Once this space was densely built up, but by no means homogeneous.
The life here in Podzamcze was very diverse. The area near the castle was the center of religious studies, religious activity. It was full of synagogues around the castle. There were many of them. The area on Krawiecka Street, on the right side of the castle of Lublin, which today is a completely empty open space, used to be inhabited by the poor inhabitants, known as the Luftmenschen. This is how they called them, due to the lack of income and that they had nothing to eat, so they were like living from the air, literally. Other parts of this district were also known for Jewish education. There was a street known as Das Kessel, or Nadstawna, since the names of different places differed depending whether you thought about Lublin in the Christian or Jewish terms. This Das Kessel was known for its school education, primary school education, like Heder, so like the lowest level of Jewish education, but also full of different Hasidic shtibels, especially related to the Iger dynasty. And on the other hand, there were different political organizations. There were 9 Jewish parties in the interwar period in Poland, representing both the Zionist movement, the leftist movement, and the religious movement, so let's say right-wing parties. And they were also active in the local politics of the city, and 5 of them were running for the elections to the municipality, so the city council. It was the beginning of the construction of the country itself, so I believe the main concern was to make sure the rights of the Jewish communities and their ideas are being heard. Second, I think, would be the material aspects of everyday existence. So there were problems with housing, with pavements, with sewers, with basic city infrastructure, which was very important to the inhabitants of this ghetto. This is also how this area was referred to, meaning that it was overlooked, let's say, during the investments made by the local municipality.
I reach into the oral history collection of the Grodzka Gate NN Theatre Centre. Years ago, the poet Julia Hartwig recorded her memories of the Jewish quarter in Lublin.
I used to go there. There was no reason not to. It was very interesting to me. I was always curious about the world, and here I had a kind of a journey at hand. Well, it was really 2 cities, but you can't call it anything else. I would prefer it not to be there, and at the same time, I would be sorry if this diversity, this complete difference, was not there. I have never experienced this in any other city. Maybe in Brooklyn, New York, where you meet Hasidic Jews, people dressed in the old Jewish fashion. But these are people who generally emigrated from Europe, so they're actually from Polish Lublin. To a large extent, they're from Eastern Europe. There were also shops there. They would sell their wares and invited customers inside. It was completely different than now. They went out in front of the houses and invited them in. And outside of the houses, there were also barrels with herrings, cabbage, cucumbers, pickled apples. You could buy all that. But I have to say, you didn't go there very often, because it was like a separate town. This was very constructive for my consciousness, because it taught me that otherness is good, enriching. It gives you a completely different view of the world.
Podzamcze, Lublin's Jewish quarter, was a bustling and densely populated area. In the perception of its inhabitants, it also differed in its smells. Some of them were given ideological significance. This is the story of Dr. Stephanie Weissmann from the University of Vienna, who spent several years researching the memory of Lublin smells after the Great War.
Speaking of the general smellscapes of the city, I think in every neighborhood there were just lots of very smell-intensive workshops located in the courtyards. We had lots of bakeries, private butchers, herring smokehouses. Also, the keeping of animals like chicken and pigs was quite common back then. And we also have to consider all the waste that came from that, no matter if it's human or animal or production waste, that also created a certain smell panorama that was quite normal for the time. However, we know that certain cultural practices do have their smell characteristics, especially when it comes to cooking, for example. And Jewish pastries that were sold all over the city are remembered as a special and a very aromatic treat. And the recollection of Jewish, whatever, bagels, makagigi and cakes are really part of the collective memory of interwar Lublin. However, on the other hand, people after 1918 would more openly accuse Jews to smell differently of garlic, herring, dirty, just different. And this old stereotype of the smelly Jew became definitely more prevalent during the Second Polish Republic. The odors of poverty and bad living conditions were perceived as their otherness. It was said that you could sniff out their otherness and could recognize them by the smell. And there were plenty of accusations that they would poison the air of their fellow Christian citizens with the stench. And unfortunately, common way of stigmatizing other ethnic and social groups through odors is not only a phenomenon of Poland in the interwar period.
Tensions in Polish-Jewish or Christian-Jewish Lublin also rose against a different background and sometimes, as at the end of April 1919, provoked violence, as Dr. Łukasz Jasina points out.
Some people say that pogrom could be applied for a bigger number of the victims, like Kishinev or Kielce in 1946. But I think when there are few victims or few people are injured in this, we can also apply this word. And there was a pogrom in Lublin. Small, not very important, sorry for a little cynical or sarcastic way to treat a history, completely forgotten, not very important for the people these days, because almost every intelligent Jew or Pole who live in Lublin knew that it happens. It is a typical behavior of the people who are unemployed or poor in the poor neighborhoods. And that's what the clerks and the civil servants defined this in 1919. It happens. But for us, 100 years later, with the experience of Holocaust, with the experience of all ethnic cleansing, this event is now very important. But of course, it wasn't important for anyone except the victims of it in 1919.
The Jewish self-defense fought against the attackers. There were no fatalities, as in other similar incidents at the time, and 66 people were wounded. The Lublin press, both Polish and Jewish, had a long dispute about the causes of the pogrom. The Polish press, which was connected to the national movement, emphasized the disloyal attitude of the Jews towards Polish independence and accused them of provoking the pogroms in order to achieve political benefits. The Jewish press, on the other hand, emphasized Poles' dislike of Jews and their treatment as second-class citizens.
Living together doesn't mean knowing a lot about each other. My great-grandmother helped Jews during the Second World War, and she was raised together with them because she wasn't very rich. And she was at school together with Jewish friends, and she had a lot of pen friends in Israel and Western Europe after the war. It means it was original in Poland after the war. And she always told me that Jews are the same. People always like to quote Shylock from Merchant of Venice. But even she, until the end of her life, believed that there was something in all those legends about the blood, about the Jews who are killing Polish or Catholic children to fulfill their food with the blood. And it means how strong it was. And now when I met many old Jews and Poles who lived together before the World War, people who had Polish friends when they were Jews and Poles who had Jewish friends. And they were talking about their friends a lot of good things. But still, when they were talking in general, all Poles or Jews were anti-Semites or anti-Polish, and they believe in all those mythical legends. It means Poles and Jews live together, but they never made enough actions to get to know each other better and better.
I'm on Lubartowska Street. At its northern end stood the Academy of the Sages of Lublin in 1930, the Chachmai Lublin Yeshiva. A few years earlier, its founder and first dean, the Rosh Yeshiva, Rabbi Meir Shapiro, had travelled to the USA and Canada to collect money for the construction of a Jewish religious university among the diaspora there. His savings and the donations of Lublin Jews had proved too meagre. The opening of the yeshiva, with its well-equipped library, was a great event that lasted a week. The ceremony was attended by the most important rabbis and tzaddikim. There were so many guests that the railway added extra cars to trains headed for Lublin. Today, the yeshiva is one of the most visible signs of a Jewish presence in Lublin. After World War II, the building was occupied by the medical academy. Today, it houses a luxury hotel and a synagogue.
Yeshiva, again, one of the largest in the Second Republic of Poland, so the interwar Poland. It's absolutely massive and absolutely beautiful as well. You can just imagine hundreds of Lublin's Jewish residents and probably from beyond Lublin as well coming here to pray on Friday evenings.
Many of its meanings have disappeared, but this space seems to embody the entire Jewish Lublin, even though the yeshiva, a center focused on religion, tradition and orthodoxy, was protested against by the Jewish left, Zionists and Bundists, as well as by the Jewish press, which accused Shapiro of embezzlement and debauchery.
And as a response to this whole situation, the Bund Party from Lublin decided that there needs to be an answer to this center of Jewish scholarship, and they decided that they will try to set up a building of Yiddish-related culture and school and theater that will be placed in the building of People's House under the patronage of Yitzhak Leibusz Peretz, which was actually successful, but the opening of the Peretz House, so-called, was planned to the 1st of September 1939.
Of course, in Lublin there was also a Catholic community,
emphasizes Sławomir Jacek Żurek.
And thanks to this community, the Catholic University of Lublin, was established in 1918. They supported this university very much. And the first rector of Catholic University of Lublin, Father Professor Idzi Radziszewski, gave a very strong impulse toward the intellectual development of Lublin. I would like once again to say that there was no connection between Catholic University and Jewish University. That this was not facilitated by the anti-Semitic attitude of the second rector of Catholic University of Lublin, Father Professor Józef Kruszyński. Rector Kruszyński was an author of many anti-Semitic books, and he was very active in the Catholic newspapers and other booklets in Poland before the Second World War. He wrote about Jews as the killers of Jesus Christ and about it that they used Christian blood to prepare matzah.
So where did these different worlds meet? After all, both were mostly poor, conservative, and unwilling to get to know the other.
They live together, they work together when they need to.
Łukasz Jasina points out.
There were mixed marriages, which is very difficult to understand, especially when we know that both societies were mostly conservatives. They were going to the schools together, especially to the high schools. But they didn't feel a need to live together more. There were no mutual streets, mostly. There were no mutual cultural activities. There were different temples and churches. It was completely free to live together when they wanted.
There was one very interesting example of relationship between assimilated Jewish people and Polish intelligentsia.
Emphasizes Sławomir Jacek Żurek.
The good example of this relationship was the friendship of Józef Czechowicz and Franciszka Arnsteinowa. They published together a poetic volume under the title Kamienie, Stones, and this book was devoted to Lublin. And the two poets exchanged the roles in this volume. Franciszka Arnsteinowa wrote about Christian Lublin and Józef Czechowicz about the Jewish tradition in our town. Home of Franciszka Arnsteinowa and her husband, Dr. Marek Arnstein, who was very famous physician in Lublin, was very open. It was very Jewish, but also very left-wing and very Polish patriotic place. The members of the Polish Socialist Party with Jewish roots and with Polish roots met in this place.
When thinking about Polish-Jewish Lublin, it's easy to forget about other communities. When I go to the historic cemetery on Lipowa Street, I am struck by the sight of graves divided by a wall. I asked the pastor of the Protestant Evangelical Augsburg parish, the Reverend Grzegorz Brudny, about their significance.
Yes, it's very unique. Our churches, I mean Catholic Church and Evangelic Church, decide to separate the cemeteries between each other by a wall. But the question was, where should be situated the graves of couples, yeah, couples who was evangelical and in the same time Catholic. For example, husband is Catholic and wife is evangelic. And they decided to grave them in the border of these cemeteries to make a break in the wall. One part of that was on the evangelical part, and the second part was in the Catholic part.
A very important person for the Lublin Christians was Dr. Alexander Szenej. He was a priest and the head of the Lutheran Church of Augsburg Confession Parish in Lublin since 1888 to 1939. In 1902, he was elected for the bishop of Warsaw Diocese, and in 1937, he was a bishop of Lublin and Wołyń Diocese. But during all this time, he lived in Lublin. What does it mean? It means that not Warsaw for more than 30 years, but Lublin was the capital of evangelical church in central Poland. The Protestant community in Lublin was not so big, but very active and rich. Majority of Protestants had German roots, but they became Poles very fast.
It is also easy to forget the Orthodox believers, Ruthenians, Ukrainians, Russians, present in the city for hundreds of years. This is recalled by literature scholar and translator Dr. Andriy Savienic.
We did not have precise data about the number of Orthodox believers in Lublin after the First World War, about some several hundred people. And they had at their disposal only two churches, the early 17th century Church of Transfiguration of Christ at Ruska Street, consecrated by the legendary Metropolitan of Kiev, Peter Mogila, and a small chapel of Holy Mary Bearers at the Orthodox Cemetery at Lipova Street. And the demographical profile of Orthodox community in Lublin changed significantly after the First World War. So only a small part of those who had lived in Lublin before the war remained, while a lot of newcomers appeared, and we can roughly divide them into three groups. First, there were political emigrants from Ukraine, mainly soldiers and officials of the Ukrainian People's Republic. Next, there was a group of the so-called white emigration from Russia who had fought Bolsheviks, and also some people of Ukrainian descent came to Lublin as a prominent center from the neighboring territories of the reborn Polish state.
And it is Orthodox believers, to a large extent people from Ukraine, who create the multiculturalism of Lublin today. At the Grodzka Gate NN Theatre, I meet Volodymyr Deshlevuk, a city guide as well as passionate historian and archive researcher.
For about a century, Lublin was a part of Russian Empire. And because of that, bureaucrats from Russia, they made a huge amount of documents in Russian language. And I can read that Russian language, I can understand Cyrillic letters. I quite often visit archive and take the documents from 19th century. In many cases, I am the first person who ever opened those papers. So a lot of things are still undiscovered in history of Lublin. And because I work in organization which deals with local history, of Lublin, I try to uncover more and more and more information about past of this city.
These were Dialogues on 20th Century History, a podcast by the European Network Remembrance and Solidarity. ENRS is funded by the Ministries of Culture from Poland, Germany, Hungary, Slovakia, and Romania. This podcast was created with the support of the Federal Institute for Culture and History of the Germans in Eastern Europe. Production, Free Range Productions.